Record. Yep,
Says recording here.
it just I clicked it as you spoke or just before or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. How are you doing? Well, I said this last time and you disagreed with me, but you look okay.
Yes, no, I actually think I am okay this time.
Good, good, good.
I'm a little compromised in various ways, which I'm going to tell you about.
Sure. Well,
One of them being that I haven't done my homework for a reason I want to try to explain, actually, but
I mean, it was short notice, but I figure we do this. Oh, I don't know. It's like going, this is a comparison I use too often in too many ways. It's like we used to do with the kids, which was that we would go to the West Coast of Scotland for the May Bank holiday weekend every year.
okay.
And without paying any attention to what the weather forecast was, because you needed to book in advance to get a cheap place and so on. And sometimes that meant famously, and family history is a good thing, eating our sandwiches in a phone booth on the ferry pier between Skye and Rosyth, because it was raining too hard
Right.
and didn't want to sit in the car to have our picnic. But sometimes it meant, swimming off white sand beaches in Erisig in 20-degree weather, and it looked and felt like the Caribbean.
Yeah,
So you win some and you lose some. And if this is not,
Well,
if you're not
I'll
as
tell
well
you.
prepared as you'd like, then we'll talk anyway.
We'll talk anyway. And I have a question about substance. So here's the problem. I have to get the final draft of the reflections book to the press by July 8th.
Right.
Which deadline I'm not going to make. But I need to make it enough that my good standing with the press remains such that I can get an extension. And I think, given the uncertainty about my lifespan, to say nothing of maybe just efficiency overall, I just need to do that. So this morning, I kind of thought, look, am I going to spend the morning reading old versions of God Approximately, which I would like to do? And I slapped myself on the other wrist. Is that a well-founded construction?
Probably not, but anyway.
I mean, not. And have been working on it.
Well,
Actually, I
that's
did.
I mean, you are the only person who can correctly set your priorities.
Right. So I think I have to do that. Now, July 8th is not very far away.
No, it's
So
not.
that might mean delaying our project by a rather short amount of time. But realism, the aforementioned realism, means it'll probably mean deferring it for longer than that. But
Understood, but
so I need
we
to.
can reduce, at the very least, reduce the frequency, but I may try to keep it ticking over one way or
Yeah,
another.
sure. Well, so here's a question, if I can just plunge in. Maybe there are
Of
other.
course. Yeah, go.
So I was struck when I wrote the postscript note to our last meeting by how I was framing everything in terms of. Well, actually, I don't even remember the last note. Hang on a second. Maybe I should take a look at it.
I should
Was it
too.
email? Probably
I
was.
believe, well, I'm sorry, if it wasn't email, then I don't have it, but that doesn't
Right.
mean that it's not worth looking at.
All right. So I'm desperately waiting.
I gather from Jim that some progress has been made on the map project.
On which project?
The Save Brian's Mac project.
Oh, yes. But not enough to have the Mac saved.
Well, he was hopeful of his next meeting with you, but maybe it didn't
Yeah.
happen that way.
So when did I?
Okay, here we are. Call this week. No, that was quick thought, it says
Quick
here.
thought. Oh, that's it. Okay.
Right?
All right. So yeah, I've got it. Right. So, as in the fourth paragraph, I say, call these the historical and metaphysical approaches.
Right.
And what I have not done is read any. So, what you think you have, or what you know that you have, is something like version 11. Is that right?
That's correct. 2009, version 11, which I
Right.
would say in terms of this dichotomy
Right.
is entirely the historical approach.
Okay.
And I think that's consistent with the note at the top, which says, in previous versions of this, I tried to produce a metaphysics which would underpin what I'm talking about, but didn't get far enough to make it worth reproducing or something like that.
Okay. And I did
Yeah.
say in previous versions of this.
I believe so. Let me just get the fact of the matter in front of me, which it nearly is. In fact, wait a minute, I'm just looking in the wrong place. No, I'm not. Okay, I think it's this one. Yes, it is. A number of manuscripts have been circulated under this title over the last 15 years.
Right.
This one lacks any sketch of a worldview exhibiting the characteristics described. I presume that means described below, as it were, somewhat in response to the first version, which tried to provide such a view without explanation of what was interesting or mattered about it. If it seems worthwhile, I may someday incorporate all the various versions into
Right.
a
Okay.
single long, it says short, monograph.
Stereograph.
Yes, something like that.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very helpful actually to me. Oh, thank you for finding that. Yes, I think that longer monograph, the yet to be produced longer monograph, is what I feel as if we're aiming at. And I don't actually know whether I made any attempt to say that these lead to the same view. I have actually thought about that. So let me actually recite from memory. Four or five sentences, and tell me if they ring a bell. Have you ever read them? Go something like this: start at the beginning. That is, start at what those who'd like to start at the beginning start with. Bosons, fermions, quarks. Assemblages, pressed into atoms and molecules, and DNA and so on and so forth. And then the second paragraph saying, of course, something like that's not a beginning, many will argue. Whatever. And then I, something like, but actually, it doesn't matter where we start, we'll end up in the same place. So in the immediate there would be something like, other people would say, start with stories or something like that. Anyway.
I see what you're saying. Okay. I mean, I think it's important that you, well, it changes the where you go next to have something like the stories line, because otherwise it's all just about where you cut the physics. And that I think is not enough. That's just what I think of as I had this a version of this conversation last week with my regular Quaker interlocutor. There are these two questions which I believe which I tend to attribute to Kant, but I may get wrong. Why is there something rather than nothing? And how ought I to live my life? And most, and if you talk to Dominicans, for instance, they will happily talk about one or the other, but usually
A
find
lot
it
of
challenging to see what the relationship is between likely answers to the first and likely answers to the second.
Fair enough.
And that's another way of saying what it is you're trying to bring together, I think.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I think what I put in the note after the historical approach is sort of a story about how our understanding of fermions and bosons, as it were, has been pressed into service as a grounds for normativity and maybe objectivity and so on and so forth. I don't think successfully, but there
Right,
is that.
that's really that's the first large paragraph in the email.
Which I've now buried under lots of windows.
Well, the pure mechanism of classical science, then rationality with reference to Frege and logic, then normativity and the current paradigm of deriving it from the evolutionary fit, etc.
Yeah, so then the argument would go something like this, that the only tenable version of the, well, either. The only tenable version of the metaphysical approach well sorry the only tenable version of both approaches ends up being indistinguishable from the tenable version of the other. And one crucial factor in that, I believe, is that both stories have to do justice to our being here.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking of the phrase, the thing which I think is very bizarrely labeled the anthropic principle,
Right.
which says, which attempts to dissolve the first of the Kantian questions by saying, because if there weren't something, we wouldn't be here to ask the question, get over it.
Yes, but I think that the anthropic
Know.
principle is misapplied radically because they try to understand what the world needs to be like in order to support life or inquiry or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly the what little I remember of the time I heard somebody talk about this at length was Planck's constant is what it is, and the fact that if you varied it by not very much in either direction, nothing would work isn't something that needs explanation because it evidently is the case.
Right.
And
It's in the
if it
world
weren't the
where it's happening.
case, I mean, yes, exactly. You know, it is at least of minor theoretical interest to establish what the bounding box is
Right.
within which we would still be here to ask that question. But having done that, there's nothing more to be said.
Right.
But I think you're so, I mean, I don't think that just that changes the availability of both projects, essentially.
I think that's right. And I actually think, there's this, well, I'm going to have to agree to the long rather than short. I'm pretty soon if I go down this pathway, but I actually think the fact, well, as I put it, which is transparent to nobody, the ontological warrant for the epistemic fact that we use differential equations to express physical laws is actually, I mean, I don't know if I said this in the objects book, but anyway, underlies the deixis of the world, which I think is fundamental to consciousness and self and various things like that. But
Because of the uncertain, no, not the uncertainty. Because, I mean, is this what I remember from the objects book, which I've already apologized for, is very little, is about the importance of slop.
yeah, no, that's a different thing.
That is a different thing. Okay, never
Yeah.
mind then. Press on.
What's the press on regardless?
Yes.
I'm not sure I should accept the regardless just now, but yeah, the deixis stuff is, I think, important to self. And something else that's interesting, this is going to sound a little bit like a non sequitur, but I think it's not for obvious reasons. The fact that LLMs and the fact that LLMs are based on the language is, I think, possibly consequential, but possibly not the reason for their success. Because I think the power of them stems from the fact that the relationality that they encode is so stupefyingly huge that all the content of the state of the network is bizarrely non-conceptual in the sense of that this
Absolutely. I mean, they got somewhere by not being representational.
Well, not being
That
represented.
no, not that,
Oh,
sorry, but not being explicitly representational, that no amount of additional funding to Doug Leonard and company would ever have gotten to.
exactly. How to say that well is not trivial, but I completely agree. I
Yeah,
completely
I mean,
agree.
I just, it would be useful in indefinitely in foreseeable future to have a conversation involving Fernando Pereira about this, because have you ever met Fernando? Not
Oh
clear to
yeah,
me. Oh.
I knew him. God knows if he was a student, but anyway, 100 years ago.
No, he was our student, so because I did his PhD oral.
Oh, I see.
No, but I think he was in California at the time of the oral, so it's possible. It doesn't matter. Anyway, he was here 6 months ago for a guest talk during our 60th anniversary celebrations, and the talk was interesting but not great and not recorded. But lunch beforehand, which was just me and him and one other person, was hugely more valuable because he was expanding to a an audience that could hear of the two of us on his anger about the fact about the impact of his own company's work, indirectly in terms of OpenAI, but in ChatGPT and so on, because he's recently changed within Google, being responsible for the natural language work, to being responsible for the sort of theory practice interface within Google. And he's very angry about the way in which people are treating the natural language problem as having now been solved and or being soluble by only by the technologies of LLMs. And but what he did for us in that conversation, and I wish I had recorded it, was give me a much clearer sense of the scale of the base model, and also the scale of the priming that it gets in order to make it a question answer.
What's that called?
The prompt, it's not the prompt, but it's something.
Prompt engineering.
Yeah. Well, the prompt engineering is, there are three aspects of this, I think. There is the base model,
Which is
which is,
something like 100 billion gigabytes or something.
yeah, it's, well, it's certainly that many dimensions. And I don't know, there's this whole business about projecting to lower dimensionalities for use that I don't understand. But there's the base model. There is the make this a question answerer, make a question answerer from this base model. And there's what do we add to the conjunction of those two from your question.
From your question, right. And is
And
the
the
third of those what's called prompt engineering?
I think so, but I could be wrong. Doesn't
No,
matter. Anyway,
I mean, you know more than, yeah, anyway.
and the even though the it's the interesting part, in a way, is in a sense, from the performance point of view, is not the base model, but it's the thing you make a question answer out of it with, because that's what the people who don't have any money skimp on, and why you then get things which lie and fabulate and contradict themselves, and in general,
I see.
or start imitating Witty Tickey Ray rather than a human being, or whatever it might be. Because actually, there's another kind of farm rather than the GPU farm that you need to build something like as successful as it is as ChatGPT, which is a huge farm of ordinary human beings asking questions and feeding back to the engineers the wrong answers, and right. saying, you know, this is this, you've got to stop this kind of answer.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not a trivial.
And that's an open-ended and in principle impossible task.
Right. Interesting.
Anyway, that was all.
A total footnote. You could have expressed your thought at the beginning of your what you just said, that that's what people who scrimp skimp on.
Yes. Something like that.
I'm afraid.
But so I think from your perspective, it's really GPT-3 that you're interested in, which is the base model. It's now GPT-4, and they won't tell you anything about that. The only thing we have any information about is GPT-3.
Right.
Well, that's the only thing I've seen published information about from Google anyway.
Right. Yes, I mean, I think that's...
OpenAI, sorry. Yeah.
From OpenAI. Yeah, I think that's what I was just talking about. I mean, it doesn't prove that I'm not interested in the other ones.
Right, but I mean, it's there, for instance, that we come back to the thing that you said, which I think is why I think Dixis is certainly in there, is not only do they not know that there's a world that not only does that 100 million gigabytes, whatever it is,
right.
100 billion gigabytes, what it doesn't have is any obligation to the world about which
that is
some kind of representation.
Right.
But that, you know, that there are that responsibility can be decomposed in any particular instance to being only about a certain small part of the world, which amounts, I guess, in many cases, to some kind of story about reference and dices. And it does. I am tempted to bring Jonathan back into this again, Jonathan Rees, because of what he's been spending the last 2 or 3 years on is trying to articulate a story about reference, which is simply defined in terms of propositions that include this are vulnerable to changes in that. That is, that include this referring expression are vulnerable to changes in that bit of the world, as a way of talking about what does that referring expression refer to?
Well,
because he's a radical empiricist, basically. He wants...
Right.
Anyway, sorry, that is taking us away now.
No, not entirely, because the... there was a title of a talk I was thinking of putting together, sort of something like the nonverbal meaning of words. If we talk about not only about Sussman, but let's say, and what he meant by empirical or something. But just we talk about the things we're talking about, the three parts. The base model, the delta that turns it into a question answering machine, and the prompt engineering that turns a particular prompt into a particular prompt, basically. particular question into a particular prompt, say. And we talk for half an hour about that, and we end up using the word prompt for our that which the third part of our tripartite distinction has turned a question into. That's right.
Yep. So far, so good.
What prompt means in our discourse at that moment is not something that necessarily could be propositionally expressed, even though I just used words to communicate with you about it. But there's no reason to suspect the kinds of understanding that I can evoke with things like early Pereira or something should actually have the form of articulation that we assume propositions have. So I don't think, and you know, take poetry as a kind of limit example.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any reason to suspect that the understanding process is ever. I mean, I think something needs to be said about articulation in the original sense of being hinged. But I guess poetry is unhinged in
absolutely. That's crucially important. That never occurred to me before. Maybe it did, because I feel like boy, it just takes a minute. Sorry.
Sure, no problem.
No, it just takes me a minute to come up with a name when I need it. So the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who was a prodigious intellect, and whose archbishopric foundered, as so many of them have over the last 40 years, over the marriage equality issue, within the Anglican, the international Anglican community, wrote a book and gave a series of lectures, possibly even Gifford lectures,
right,
about the necessity of poetic discourse,
right,
in the face of the divine, the infinite, whatever, you know, what he had spent his life promulgating. You could almost view it as an at the end of his time in that role, a sort of apology pro vita sua, in terms of the defense of the creed, which attempts to be wholly explicit about something which he in the end feels it's impossible to be even usefully explicit, much less wholly explicit.
Right.
And I feel guilty that I've never bought or tried to read the book, but I felt like I got most of what lectures were brilliant. And of course, you know, illustrated by lots of good, impenetrable, and more or less penetrable poetry. but that's something that you never know where you're going to find somebody who shares the same thought.
Well, I mean, this conversation we're having is a good example of what does poetry mean, right? We've already bent it like a string on an electric guitar,
But that's what language is good for. I mean,
That's what
again,
language is good for. Yeah, no, absolutely.
this is Robin Cooper's. You remember Robin, perhaps
Yeah, I do remember.
from the old days. His point that it's fundamental to the success of language that what you understand by what I say is not what I meant by it. I'm exaggerating only slightly.
Yeah.
Right. Somewhere, I don't know if he ever even wrote this. He used to give a critique of the so-called conduit metaphor. By saying, you know, that's not just unhelpful. It's incoherent. You can't take whatever my mental structures are and inject them into somebody else's brain by any means and get any useful results.
It's actually interesting because you could write a short story on maybe science fiction, I don't know. On what would evolution have looked like if our spinal cords came to the surface?
Right.
Like,
Well,
would.
and I think that there are many people who think that once we have a 38-pin socket at the base of our spinal cord,
Right.
That turning a VAT-produced body into me is just a matter of cabling the one up into the other.
Right, with high bandwidth.
With high bandwidth and whatever the neural equivalent of rsync is.
Right. But it's interesting because one of the things that I think that deep learning folks have realized is that populating levels with arbitrary numbers of neurons or fake neurons or whatever isn't always helpful. The reduction in number of neurons on a given level is often necessary in order to force the abstraction, basically.
I don't think I'd heard that before. That's interesting.
I'm not sure I've heard it before, but that's certainly what I take the fact that these things collapse if they have too many neurons.
You can always throw more data in, but you can't just throw more layers or nodes in the layers without some more architecture.
That's right, because it actually, it's not that it won't get any better, it'll actually get worse.
Yeah. No, I guess because it will never, I think,
it'll never settle.
Well, naively, I would say, because it will never converge.
Never converge. That's what I meant to say, rather. Yeah.
They're never settled. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, because there's not enough pressure
right.
on the channel.
That's right.
To make it effective encoding required.
Right.
And so it will just keep wandering around with stuff that is good enough.
So, okay, so let's go back to the
topic.
The question is whether the metaphysical story, which might be actually just a more successful version of the anthropic principle, I don't know. I don't like what I've read under the
No, neither do I. Well, I don't, yeah.
So anyway, I'm not going to use it anymore.
No, I'm sorry. I introduced it only because it's, again, see previous discussion, because it's a shorthand for a line of thought.
Yeah, no, it is, which has gone astray, I think. But anyway,
but you were going to say that the metaphysical
question Well, you know, I have said, sorry, I'm starting over. I have said that we are in of and about the world. And the in and of are pretty serious facts.
Mm.
And it's funny writing about reflection, even though I'm not writing about reflection. But I'm kind of writing about, well, I'm writing about the fundamental notion of computing as revealed by looking at reflection. And the reason reflection is such a salutary example is that, you know, I take computation to be a dialectic of meaning and mechanism, to refer to the other book that I want to write. It both represents and does.
Mm.
And, but crucially, it represents and does, and it needs to represent its representation, it needs to represent its doing, and it needs to be able to do what it represents itself as doing, and whatever. I mean, it exemplifies, and it's both part of its properties it exemplifies and properties it can represent, which is forces a certain kind of discipline on it. And that fact about reflection is related to, I mean, I feel now as if I'm instantiating this idea that the layers need fewer neurons because I'm losing neurons at a rate that's forcing everything into being the same thing. But that fact about us being here and representing being here and what the constraints on that are is a pretty serious fact about how we think, I think. And I think the ontological facts that the use of differential equations in physics represents, which are never given a name, but that's what I think the dyksis sort of is. It's just one of the things that is pushed on us. That's a funny use of the word push, but it's one of the things we're not normatively accountable to, we just are bluntly accountable to.
Yeah, we're obliged by.
We're obliged to have much better
the circumstance.
Thank you. Yeah, we're obliged to.
So that, I think, that claim that you just uttered, I don't understand. And I think elucidating it, and maybe the elucidation is in the objects book if I went back and found it, but it's not. But I think it's necessary if you want to. I mean, the problem is at the purely sort of tactical level,
right.
Whether it's necessary to take 10 or 15 pages to reformulate each of the two stories in order to demonstrate that they converge.
Right.
Or, you know, it's, I haven't, I, it feels to me like that's not perhaps what you would like to do, but it's the only structure that I've been able to think of given what we've been saying so far. But maybe there's another, I mean, because the problem is that there are critical steps in each of those, which you understand, and which you may or may not have articulated in one place or another, is, you know,
right. Well,
already, but they haven't been pulled together in a way.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And I think my tendency would be to recapitulate both of them in 1,000 to 2,000 pages.
Yes, well, exactly.
And that would serve nobody's interest. Um, And one thing also that's interesting about the Dykes' story is it is obvious to a very small number of people, all of whom I believe are computer scientists. And that's, I mean, it's just an interesting intellectual history sort of fact. And very smart people, like my friend, whose name escapes me right now, young Rosa Tao, father's a philosopher of science. She's got two PhDs, one in philosophy, one in neuroscience now, and she's on the faculty at Stanford. And I like her too much. But anyway, I'm not in touch with her. She and I have had this explicit conversation about why it's obvious that the structure of indexicals in language and the structure of magnetism and the way physics is expressed in terms of properties, not objects, and that the regularities are differential, which is why the differential equations are used, are the same fact. And it just strikes her as inane and absolutely not. They have nothing to do with each other.
It's certainly not inane, but it's not immediately effable either.
Well, not only is it not immediately effable, but I feel as if I tried to express it in the objects book. I've tried to express it in numerous places since, and none of my expressions of it have actually made any headway with the people to whom it's not obvious, which is interesting. I mean,
so can you name anybody to who has successfully, in fact, maybe already before you even mentioned it, grasped this, that I might know?
Well, Jun is one, but as I said to Jill, Jun probably understands my work, as it were, better than anybody, but nobody can understand him.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is, there is this lack of transitivity in things like that.
Yep. So it's a puzzle to me to what extent he should be named
whether he will appear for the defense in court.
Right.
He's
failed his PhD oral at Duke in philosophy.
Yeah, I'm sure that could be said of many good people.
Whether he should be custodian of the oeuvre. At any rate.
Well, I mean, that's that, I but that's got to be a goal. That has got to be a goal, it seems to me, to try to break through that logjam. But
yeah,
maybe too hard for this life.
Well,
you were just going to revert to Fernando.
Yes, I think I don't know if I've just made this up, but I think he's somebody who thought, oh, yeah, of course, that's obvious. And actually, someone who definitely thinks it's obvious is, I guess he's still with us in some sense. Had a psychotic break. Taught at UCLA for a year. Hengi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Him.
Yes. I'll fill in reference. I can do that. Oh dear. Give me 90 seconds and I'll have the name, I think, usually.
Because that's how long it takes to look something up.
Well, it's how, I mean, no, I can't actually make it happen. It's not a process. It's not a consciously accessible process.
Right. But it's 90 seconds in your brain, not 90 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I often find that the name I'm looking for comes along after the conversation has moved on by about a minute, subjectively.
I have a problem in my eye that I have very bad case of, what are they called? Anyway, foggy bits of my eye. Which mean that whatever I focus on goes blurry. And
my mobile phone camera has that problem.
So that might be true of attention too.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We should probably, in the interests of your stamina, if not mine, bring this to a close for now and let you spend a little more time on reflection
before collapsing.
Before you, yeah, exactly. Turn to.
But at any rate, Agri.
Yes, there you go, Phil Agri. Well done. You see, it took you 90 seconds.
I know it did. It was obvious.
What about him? No, it was obvious to him. Yes.
Yeah, I remember saying it to him, and he said, "Oh yeah, of course, that's right." And in fact, the model that he takes to underwrite whatever he's famous for, is it Pengy? I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the revolution in planning, which I used to have to teach, which I used to be able to teach about, and if now for the people have lost sight of. I mean, planning isn't a thing anymore.
No,
you know,
that's
this, right. I don't think I could point to a single one of my 120 colleagues at Edinburgh, the largest AI establishment in Europe, and say that since Austin Tate retired, and say that they work on planning.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's reinforcement learning, but that's only planning by courtesy or post hoc.
It's interesting. Xander is a planner.
In terms of his job title, yes.
Right. Well, in terms of what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I know.
It's urban planning, but hold the urban.
Well, I mean, that's what Catherine, who's back there somewhere, right. I think. Yes. Absolutely, right? The design of the non-built environment.
Right.
Defined privatively.
Here's a question which I thought about once and I was sort of struck by, which is, if England were to decide one day to switch overnight to driving on the right instead of driving on the left, I believe the following proposition is true, which is the roads would be fine as is. What would have to change is an awful lot of signage.
And it's an interesting question, at least some traffic lights. But that is, so there would have to be, some things would have to be physically moved, as well as the content of some. Well, indeed, some signs would have to be moved, right? They would be in the wrong place.
They'd be in the wrong place.
No, the stop signs, you know, a stop sign which is sitting on the, to your right as you come to a stop, would have to be moved. Well, sorry, saying to your left.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just remembering this, because it might well have been you who told me this order 45 or 50 years ago, which is that two particular points about the early days of the systems theory class at MIT, both of them about what the about examining the systems theory class, that the final year project was to describe in as much accurate detail as possible the algorithm implemented by the tech square elevators without using an oscilloscope. And the other was to produce a succinct, whether it was a project or actually an exam question, which is to produce the too long didn't read 3-page outline of what the Swedish government needed to do exactly that, because they have.
Right. No, these are not, none of this rings a bell. So.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Someone else.
Someone else. But exactly so. So, but okay, sorry, but so.
The point of that.
The point of the fact that that you know stipulate that we had somehow managed to evolve our traffic system, without ever actually asphalting any tarmac, and so the paths were just the consequence of our driving. Nothing of the non-human world would need to change.
Right.
People would find it inconvenient that their steering wheel was on the side that it was on. But the fact that I drove in this country, right. And so did Catherine drive the Saab that I brought
yeah,
from
right.
California
right. yeah.
for many years, is, you know, that's not...
Testament to something.
Well, it's a testament to something, but it's also, it doesn't falsify the claim.
Right.
That no human artifacts would need to change,
yeah.
to adapt to this. But the question of whether you could, well, if you used, if so we could articulate this further, right? You have to suppose that in the absence of any signage,
right.
or any traffic signals, that rotaries had to evolve, because rotaries enable you to efficiently have crossroads without any, you know, without any overt control of flow.
But no, but hang on a second. The ovaries, I mean, the ovaries, the rotaries.
I'm sorry, we won't go there. Strike that from the record, Your Honor.
Right. The rotaries in Sweden have the following property, which is their spirals. So you enter, and
depending on how far you're going, you go further in.
That's right. Because if you're going to get off at the farthest exit to the rotary, you move into the center.
Yeah. Well, all big rotaries in the UK are like that now.
Are like that.
But they're marshaled by lines on the pavement.
Right. But you once you got yourself in the right lane, then it dumps you off at a certain exit.
No, it doesn't. That's what's interesting. Because the lines just take you into the center. You have to then cut across the lines that are taking somebody else into the center to get off when you want to get off.
Well, that's the opposite of Sweden, I believe.
Well, I'm sorry, my immediate thought is you can't not have potential crossings.
No, but they happen right when you get in. When you get into the rotary, you cross as
But many. As you get in, you're crossing people who are on their way out.
Right.
You must be.
Yes, right? No, absolutely.
So you can't have that. You can only have you have to, if you're going to put lines on the pavement that indicate priority, they can only deal with they have to give that priority unequivocally at every intersection. And so you have to decide who has priority, people coming in or people going out.
Right. And you pretty much have to decide people going out.
Because, except I, yeah, I guess, yes.
Otherwise, you might end up with a logjam of people in the rotary.
There is a rotary that I don't like going on the bike, precisely because as a cyclist, when you have to cross the line of priority, you're vulnerable because
right.
people assume you're going slow or they don't even see you.
Right. Right.
Anyway,
Anyway,
I was entertaining ourselves without actually moving ourselves forward.
Yeah, so okay, so I think what I wanted to say by way of summary is there a feasible project, God willing, and the creeks don't rise, to have a shortish version of this story that tells these two stories?
And we can but try.
We can but try. And I think a subsidiary question to that is, can I, and it might, the answer might be no, can I come up with an effable description of why the Dyxis generates, why the physical Dyxis generates linguistic indexicals? The simple.
That's already a better way of putting it. Carry on.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, that's all I would want to say. And is that story essential to the fusion, as it were, that this project is aiming at? I don't think those are questions that, I'm not going to try to answer them now. And I don't think, I can't answer, I can't do anything until the Reflections book is in.
Understood, but those are questions we can pick up then.
Well, but also they can be mulled on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before then.
And there was something moderately important there that just slipped. What was it? Oh, yes. It also occurs to me that there's a, just, I just want to get this on the record and we can say goodbye.
Sure.
There's a trick that Feynman pulls in what I think is the best thing that he ever wrote, which is his book about why glass is transparent, which has a title which has quantum something in it, but I can't remember now, doesn't matter. It's only about this, it's less than a centimeter thick.
Oh, when you think of it, give me a note.
And it, what he says in the introduction is that, if characteristically, Feynman introduction, because he says, the thing I hate about popular science is they don't tell you when they're lying to you.
Right.
Because they have to lie to you, because to tell you the truth would mean that they'd exceed their word count.
Right.
Right. And newspaper editors are very jealous of people, you know, of their word count.
Yeah.
And there is a point in this book in which I'm going to lie to you, and I'm going to tell you when we get there so that you know.
Right. Okay.
Because it's the one point in the book where I think people with a reasonable grasp of moderately sophisticated mathematics to the degree of a high school diploma and maybe a little bit of calculus can understand. But there's one point at which that's blown, and so I'm going to lie to you, and I'll tell you.
That's what Feynman says.
That's what Feynman says in the introduction, right. And he does indeed at some point in the book tell you. And the version of that that might apply is to go back to a rhetorical stance which you adopted briefly 20 or 30 years ago, and I think correctly subsequently abandoned, which is the promissory, you know, where your version of that was, who needs to accept what promissory notes in the course of, you know, when am I uttering promissory notes which I'm not delivering on? The similar phenomenon. I think it's in the objects book that you, in the preface to the objects book that you you articulate a sort of epistemological stance about the necessity of being clear when promissory notes are being uttered.
Right.
Well, a sort of lighter weight, and even in the sense of Feynman being humor, being constantly lurking around the edges, that maybe the way to get a 50-page draft of the 4,000-page pair of parallel drafts is simply to put square brackets, magic happens here.
Right, right.
Ad lib.
Yeah.
And fill them in as time allows.
As time allows, yeah.
The point is, at the very least, not to run into the sand at those points.
Right, right, right.
Another way to do it is to put together lecture notes for my class, which I regularly did and compressed an enormous amount and whatever. I mean, that was a discipline that came pretty easily to me and didn't bog down. And So.
Well, we could. Yep. I mean, if we have the time to have the lectures to cover the 2,000 pages, then that can be done.
That can be done. Yeah.
That can be done. Anyway, all right. Best to Jill. And it occurs to me, since we're, you know, it's, I don't think there's much coming in the way of reasons why this wouldn't work for us. Would sometime this weekend for a four-way half-hour social conversation be possible? After the point at which you're no longer capable of doing useful work on the reflection book one day? And not only possible, but welcome.
Yeah.
With respect to which you need to involve Jill and I need to involve Catherine.
I think not this weekend.
Okay. Well, I can't see further forward than that. So that's okay.
Okay. We'll do it soon.
Yeah. Let's not lose tight.
It's interesting. So, I have. Oh, sorry. No. Yes.
Okay, take care. Okay. God bless and best to Jill.
And God bless Catherine too.
I will. Goodbye.
Okay, cheers.
I'm going to stop recording and then...